He could hear them talking about getting some food. Then suddenly the kid's head came up and he gave the girl a shove. Sal had two wands out. He fired the first one, a cramper, as people called it, at the kid, watching with satisfaction as he called out for his friend to run and then fell to the pavement, curling up into a twitching ball. The girl was fast, and Sal took a shot at her with the second wand, a paralyzation wand, just as she turned and dodged between two buildings. She made some kind of noise as she disappeared from sight. Just to be safe, he shot the kid with the paralyzation spell as well. That wand had several charges in it, unlike the cramper, which was now spent and would take weeks to recharge. Running up to the kid, Sal looked around to make sure no one had seen anything. No one was around, no one was yelling, and he couldn't even hear the sound of that gal running away. Either she was far away now or she was locked up for the next 15 minutes. Sal didn't really care which. Pulling out the case with the hypodermics in it, he pulled out the first one, and reaching down with his hand, he grabbed the kid's jacket up by the neck and pulled it down a bit. The kid's eyes were looking up at him, and Sal hesitated for a moment. He couldn't recall ever seeing someone's eyes being open after being hit with the muscle-cramping spell in the past.
"Weissman,"
Sean croaked at him, shocking the hell out of him.
"Sorry, kid."
Sal's voice was suddenly cut off as Sean's foot lashed out and kicked him hard in the stomach, knocking him back into the street. How was the kid still moving? He'd used that very same wand a dozen times before. The spell lasted 10 minutes. No one had ever before come out of it that fast. Sal switched mental gears and let go of the hypodermic case before he'd even hit the ground. No way was he bringing this kid in alive. He was gonna have to kill him. Sean had seen it when the spell hit. It was the same muscle-cramping spell he'd learned from when the Gradatin guards had shot him with it. The very one he'd loaded into the wands his own wolves now used. Apparently, it was a very popular spell for subduing people. Sean had really been expecting something a bit more lethal. Pushing Peg off to run, he simply collapsed on the ground and curled up, like he'd seen those whom the spell affected do. The second spell, the paralyzed attack, also had no effect on him, being absorbed by his firewall spell as well. Sean figured if Weissman went after Peg, he'd use a few spells on him. But instead, Weissman had stopped and pulled out a needle. Sean didn't know what was in it, but he doubted it was any good.
"Weissman?"
he asked, just to make sure he had the right guy. As soon as Weissman, or Hyena, responded, Sean kicked him in the chest, hard, so he wouldn't get stuck with whatever that needle was. Sal watched the kid spring to his feet as he himself rolled to his own feet. Getting up quickly, he reached into his coat to grab his pistol. The .454 Casull he carried would drop damn near anything, as he had it loaded with highly magical silver bullets. It was without a doubt the deadliest thing you could shoot a lichen with. Though he doubted in this case the silver would have any effect. But each bullet had enough spells on it to cost Sal a cool 2 grand apiece. With that much silver, an enchanter could lay down a lot of spells, and Sal had paid for a dozen of them.
"My name is Sean Valens,"
Sean growled at Sal, as he stuck a hand in his coat.
"You killed my father."
And then, almost as an afterthought, Sean smiled nastily and added,
"Prepare to die."
"Hate to spoil your plans there, kid,"
Sal said, and drawing the pistol, he fired 2 quick shots. No fancy headshots, not when your life was on the line. He aimed right for the center of mass and watched as Sean grunted as he was hit. Obviously, the silver wasn't having an effect, but none of the spells were going off either. Sean grunted as the 2 bullets slammed into him. From the surge of power from his shield, he knew the bullets had to have been silver. Considering the size and the impact, they must have had a lot of silver in them. Sean channeled the extra power into a quick healing spell from his defensive framework.
"Silver doesn't work on me. Or hadn't you figured that out yet?"
"How the hell are you even still standing? There's enough magic on those bullets to kill a Gorgon. I know."
Sean growled and counted his blessings that when the bullets had transmuted, the spells on them had been broken. He didn't doubt that a hitman who specialized in magical beings had gotten his bullets enchanted, as he claimed. He was just happy that he didn't know that anything which changed the object destroyed the enchantments. Kicking off his shoes so he could use his foot claws, Sean shifted into his hybrid form and started walking towards Sal.
"I suggest you run," Sean roared.
Sal swore and took three more shots as fast as he could pull the trigger, emptying the revolver. Then, turning on his heel, he ran as the lion's roar echoed off the buildings. This wasn't just a kid out for vengeance. This was a fucking monster. His first thought was to run for the van. There were a few things in there that might help him, but that would mean stopping to get inside of it. Having seen the size of the kid after he'd shifted, Sal wasn't sure that was a good idea. He'd seen a lion wear or two over the years, but he sure as hell didn't recall any of them being as big as this one. Something hit him in the back then, and Sal went down, feeling his bones break as he got hit with what felt like a wall. Survival kicked in, and Sal shifted into his own hybrid form. He only lost his shoes and split his shirt. Sal was always picking his clothes carefully in case of emergencies. But shifting while healing caused him to cry out in pain as he rolled over and noticed what he'd been hit with. Thankfully, it wasn't the lion ready to finish him off. No, it was a dumpster. The fucking lion had picked up and thrown a dumpster at him hard enough to knock him down and break his spine. Getting back to his feet, Sal dug his claws in, and he ran. He didn't know how fast lions could run, but he didn't think one could run as fast as he was.
"Run, you coward! Run!"
Sal heard growled behind him, and then stumbled as he got hit in the back with a rock the size of a small boulder. Sal started weaving back and forth after that to try and make it a little harder for him to be hit by the things the lion was grabbing off the side of the road as he ran along after him. Turning onto one of the building properties, Sal vaulted over the fence and landed in among a bunch of old trucks and construction gear. Some of it was still good. Some of it was obviously being saved for parts. And there were piles of scrap metal and even racks with girders on them scattered about. Dodging around a couple of old enclosed trailers used for storage, Sal stopped and leaned back against a wall, mouth open wide so as not to give away his location by breathing too hard as he patted down his pockets. He'd lost the gun the first time he went down, but it wasn't the only weapon he had on him. He had half a dozen more wands, though one of those was another cramper, so he discounted using it. The sleep spell wand, he figured that was worth a try. Then, it was on to the fireballs, ice shards, flamethrower, and if all of that didn't work, the big one, the one that cost him $500,000 and would only ever work once. Greater disintegration. Just then, an I-beam erupted through the wall only inches from where Sal's head was, and, swearing under his breath, Sal was immediately off and running around the trucks, looking for a good spot to ambush the lion as it came looking for him. His father had warned him years ago about hunting lions. He'd warned his son that they always ended up hunting you instead. Sal was starting to think he should have listened. Ducking down behind an earth mover, Sal looked around carefully. Where the hell was that damn lion? Just then, he felt some dirt falling down onto him, and looking up, there on top of the machine was that damn lion. Whipping out the first wand, he fired it off, and then, grabbing the second one, he fired that off as well. Sean snorted and just ignored this sleep spell. The fireball, however, was a different matter, but Sean had spent more than a few hours learning methods for deflecting physical spells. Most wizards did, and for Sean it was beyond easy. He just sent the fireball straight up into the air and gave it a little extra boost, so when it blew up, it was high enough in the air not to hurt anybody.
"Oh, look, they're celebrating your death already," Sean growled, looking down at Sal. And then, stepping off the top of the vehicle, Sean landed next to him.
Sal reached for another wand to shoot at Sean, but Sean grabbed his arm before he could pull it out. And then, with an angry snarl, Sean turned his body as he pulled on Sal's arm. apparently trying to rip it from his body.
Sal cried out in shock as he felt his shoulder dislocate, the bone yanked from the socket as his entire body was suddenly yanked from off his feet and thrown across the stockyard with such force that when he hit the cinder block wall on the other side, he went right through it.
"You're not getting away that easily,"
Sean roared angrily and started off after Sal again. Sal shook his head to try and clear it. He'd gone through the wall head first and cracked his skull, which was still healing, leaving him dazed. His shoulder also burned with pain as it healed, his fingers numb as the nerves regenerated. Scrambling to his hands and knees, he started to crawl off into the darker shadows in the building. He was in some sort of stockroom. There were large spools of what looked like cables and chains set around the place, with heavy rods and other tools he didn't recognize.
"Screw this,"
Sal muttered, and pulled out the disintegration wand. Yeah, he'd lose the commission because there probably wouldn't be enough of the lion to prove that he'd killed him, but Sal was a lot more invested in his own personal survival at this point. This Sean wasn't a kid. He was a lion with magical protections that also knew magic and knew it pretty damn well. Sal suddenly recalled all the old stories, the old myths and the legends. Lions were the lawgivers, the kings, the first among the lichens, and the first of the lichens, the ones that all bowed down to. The ones that on the good days you hoped smiled upon you, and the ones that on the bad days you hoped ignored you. The old gods of the lichens.
"You're not the god of me," Sal growled.
"Oh, but I am,"
Sean whispered in his ear, and then grabbing him by the back of his coat, Sean hoisted him up and threw him across the room and into a stack of cable spools, heavy enough that they didn't even move when Sal crashed into them hard enough to break bones. Sal blinked and shook his head again. He hadn't lost his hold on the wand, and raising his arm up, he winced at the pain. It was broken and healing a lot slower than normal, because a lot of his bones had been broken that time.
"Wands don't work on me. I thought you realized that by now."
Sal waved the wand over to where the voice had come from, but there was nothing that he could see there in the darkness.
"But I guess you could try,"
came the voice again, softer, closer into his left. Crying out in pain as he spun to the side, Sal again was faced with nothing as his bones continued to knit, and the cuts on his body slowly sealed up.
"Oh, look, up here,"
the voice came again, and looking up, Sal saw a dark shape come flying towards him. Diving down onto the ground, Sal felt the breeze of something large flying over his head, and then heard the loud crash as whatever it was slammed into the stack of spools where he'd just been standing. Looking down the aisle, he saw it, the shape of a man, a large man, standing there. Pointing the wand at it, he triggered it and watched as the man, the wall behind him, and everything around him suddenly turned to dust and just flew off into the air.
"I got you, you bastard,"
Sal laughed.
"Oh no, I had a father, until you took him away. That's why I'm going to kill you. Mr. Weissman, I presume?"
Sal's eyes got wide as a strong hand grabbed him by the back of the neck and picked him up, another hand slashing down and breaking his right arm, causing his fingers to go limp and drop the wand. Not that it would ever work again.
"Such a waste of a good jacket, too," Sean growled, and picking the hyena up, he slammed him into the wall face first.
Putting his hand inside the hyena's coat, Sean searched him quickly, ripping off and throwing aside every magical item that he found. Damn, he had a lot. Then he found the necklace. The moment Sean's fingers closed on it, he knew what it was. A silver tag, but without a lichen necklace attached. It was on a heavy chain, the tag being made of gold and in the shape of an animal's head. When Sean checked it, it even had his father's encryption program running on it. Sean recalled then that the tag he had was his father's second attempt. This damn hyena had not only killed his father, but he'd stolen the first example of his father's genius. Letting go of Sal, Sean ripped the necklace off over his head as Sal dropped to his knees.
"You bastard," Sean growled. "You not only killed him, but you stole this, his greatest achievement, the thing that is going to free all of the Lycans from the tyranny of the mages. The greatest thing he ever did, and you soiled it with your filthy, murdering paws."
Sal turned then and punched the kid in the stomach, just as hard as he could, almost breaking the bones in his hands from the attempt. Then he hit him again with his other hand, and yet again. The lion just ignored it, barely grunting. 20 years ago, Sal was sure he could have beaten this lion. But that was 20 years ago. He was in his 60s now. He was old. Too old and obviously too weak.
"How did you know my name?" Sal asked, panting.
Damn, this kid was tough. He'd tried everything he knew. Sean's voice was a rough growl.
"Roger told me, before I killed him. But he didn't know who hired you. So I'm asking you now. Who hired you?"
"Hired me for what? You?"
Sal asked, motioning weakly to Sean.
"To kill my father,"
Sean roared, and lunging forward he grabbed Sal by the neck again and drove him back into the wall. Sal felt the claws come out and sink about an inch into his neck. Sal suddenly realized that Sean was going to kill him, and he really didn't want to die, old man or not. Well, he had one last card to play, and if he didn't play it now, he never would.
"I didn't steal that amulet from your father," Sal replied.
"What? What do you mean you didn't steal it?"
Sean snarled, moving his head closer to Sal, noses almost touching now. Sal couldn't help but look into those eyes, in the dimness of the room, with the surrounding black of the lion's mane. Those eyes seemed to glow, floating in a sea of darkness. They were all he could see. Sal wondered if they'd be the last thing he ever saw.
"He gave it to me."
"Liar!"
Sean roared right into his face. For the first time tonight, Sal actually found himself getting angry.
"I don't lie," he growled back. "Your father gave it to me. Freely. I didn't steal it. I'm not a thief."
"You stole his life,"
Sean growled softly.
"Yes, I killed him. But we had a deal."
Sal watched as Sean blinked a moment. The hatred in those glowing eyes seemed to lessen, though the grip on his neck was still like iron.
"Talk,"
Sean commanded him.
"I cornered him in his lab. He'd seen me coming, and had sent everyone out, evacuated the building. When I got to him, he told me he had a deal for me."
Sal remembered it well as he recounted the events of that meeting to Sean. Bernard Valens had not been at all what he'd been expecting.
"So, you are the one they've sent to kill me,"
Bernard said, looking him over calmly.
"Before you do, I have a deal I'd like to make with you."
Sal snorted. They always tried to make a deal, if he gave them a chance, that is.
"I'm not going to let you live, old man,"
Sal growled. Bernard laughed at him.
"What would be the point of a deal for my life? They'd simply send another." "No, I'm not here to deal for my life. I wish to deal for the life of my wife and my son."
Sal stopped.
"They want me to kill them after I kill you."
"I thought the mobs had a rule about women and children."
"We used to, but that was years ago. Now," Sal sighed, "now it's become harder to stick to the old ways."
"What if I were to make it worth your while?" Bernard asked him. "What if I were to offer you something that no one else in the world could offer you? What then?" Would you swear to honor that old rule? Tell those that hired you that you will not kill my wife and child, and that if they should try, you will kill them instead.
Sal laughed. What could you possibly offer me, old man? There's nothing you have that I can't buy with the money they promised me.
Immunity to Silver, Bernard said.
What? Such a thing is impossible.
Bernard smiled at him. Why do you think they want me dead? If I can prove to you that I can do this for you, will you swear to me what I have asked? Sal didn't even think twice. Immunity to Silver. He'd be untouchable from this day forward. No one would ever have control over him again. Never would he have to fear the one thing that all Lycans did.
Yes. I swear that if you can give me immunity to Silver, I will tell them that I will kill any who attempt to kill your wife or child, that I will honor the old rules on women and children.
Bernard held out an amulet. It was a golden wolf's head on a necklace. Here, put this on. Sal took the amulet and looked at it.
This isn't any kind of trick, is it?
Bernard shook his head. No. I'm dealing honestly and truthfully with you. You've agreed to what I want. Breaking that deal would be foolish now. As I said, I know that even if I were to escape you, they'd simply hire another. The secret of that amulet is one that they cannot bear to have known. So I would advise you not to let anyone know you have it, or they'll be after you next. Sal nodded and put on the necklace. Bernard picked up a small coin from off the top of his desk. Sal recognized it immediately as an old mercury head silver dime.
Here, take this.
Sal took it and noticed that as soon as his fingers touched it, the coin got warm and the color of it changed slightly.
Son of a bitch!
Sal swore and looked up at Bernard, who was smiling. No one believed I could do it. No one. But I did it. Now, I've honored my end of the bargain. Sal nodded. He always kept his word. Always.
I'll honor mine.
Sal had made sure to kill him quickly and painlessly. He'd then gone before the entire conclave to tell them what Bernard had asked him to.
Then why the Gesh? Why the oath by my mother? Sean growled, giving Sal a shake.
They were worried about you, about your mother, seeking revenge, Sal told him, and then added, I was worried as well. Your father was very concerned about you and her living on. I make my way in this world by living off the revenge of others. I have seen what it does to a man.
Sean growled, but stopped as he thought about that.
Your father made a deal.
I'm aware of that, Sean replied angrily.
You should honor it.
You're asking a lot of me, Sean warned.
That's only because you're capable of giving it.
When did you break the Gesh?
Sal asked him, interrupting Sean's internal conversation.
Why do you want to know? Sean asked.
They told me that they moved against you when they realized that you had learned magic, but they have no idea of when you broke free of their Gesh.
Sean growled.
The Gesh was removed by my second wife, after I'd been attacked several times, before I even fully understood what was going on.
You didn't break faith first, then?
Sal asked, considering the implications of that, and of what he'd promised Sean's father 12 long years ago. Sal had given his word. If someone else had broken theirs first. Sean snorted.
Harkins and the Ascendants broke faith first. Ask any of the other councils. They all know the truth now. I didn't know about any of this. Magic. Lycans. The real reason my father was killed.
Sean growled as he mentioned his father.
I was blissfully ignorant. Another stupid kid without a fucking clue.
Sean could feel his eyes burning as he held back tears.
They took it all.
and then they came back and took it again. They just couldn't leave us alone.
Sal growled deep in his chest. He didn't like being lied to by a client, but he liked it less when the client who had lied to him had also broken his sworn oath.
They lied to me. They lie to everybody, Sean said hotly. I take it Harkins hired you then.
Yes, both times, Sal admitted. And with his attacks on you, breaking the sworn oath he made to me, the one I duly swore to uphold, I have no choice now but to kill him.
Assuming that I don't kill you myself, Sean said, growling again. There is this small matter of my father's death.
Your father's death was a foregone conclusion before I ever met him, Sean. You know that. I, however, took his deal and have kept it. If you want a piece of me, fine, so be it. However, I have an obligation to your father to fulfill. You will let me go, so I can honor it.
He's right, Sean's lion said.
Damn it,
Sean swore angrily.
What about your contract on me?
I do not take contracts from those who break their sworn oaths to me, Sal told him,
and then fell to the floor as Sean released his grip.
Stay,
Sean said, and cast paralysis on Sal.
What are you doing?
Sal said, looking at him surprised.
Getting a head start. I guess this is yours, Sean said,
and placed the amulet back around Sal's neck. Turning away, Sean trotted off, heading back to where the others were gathering for the attack. He had no idea how long that spell would hold Hyena there, and they still had a lot to do if they were going to attack tonight. Before the storm.
Ah, Sean, good of you to join us, Chad said, as Sean came into the room.
Sean was still in his hybrid form. There was no way he was going to run across sparks and freezing weather without a shirt or a jacket. No doubt the police had gotten more than a few strange phone calls tonight, as Sean hadn't given a damn as to whether or not anybody had seen him.
What happened to you?
I ran into the man who killed my father,
Sean growled, and sat down at the open chair at the foot of the table. Chad winced.
Ouch, that doesn't sound good. Is he dead?
Sean shook his head and growled.
I had to let him go.
Why?
Personal reasons,
Sean said, and gave Chad a look that made it clear he didn't want to talk about it.
Okay,
Chad said, and turned back to the other members of the Fellowship, who were all looking at Sean with looks of intense curiosity. Looking at the other members of the Fellowship, Sean growled angrily.
My father made a deal with him. He's held to his end of the bargain, so I have to honor my family's side.
What kind of a deal?
Ted from the Leopard families asked.
None of your business. The topic is closed,
Sean said hotly, while staring down everyone at the table.
Right.
Chad rapped on the table with his knuckles, gaining everyone's attention. They were all too happy to look away from Sean at this point. All of you wanted to know the plan for tonight's operation, seeing as all of you have made some level of contribution to it. The goal of the plan is simple. Remove all of the lichens at the Ascendant's compound and free them. The execution, however, is going to be anything but. They know we're coming, and they're ready for us. Our only advantages are, first, they've been waiting for us to attack for 2 weeks now, so they're starting to get fatigued. There's only so long you can wait for something before it starts to wear you down. Second, we get to choose the time of our attack. We pick tonight because the weather forecast is to be freezing, which will keep most of the mages indoors. We pick the lateness of the hour because most people will be in bed, and a lot of those still up will be tired. Third, we're going in overwhelming force. From the wolves we were able to waylay and question today, the opposing Lycan forces break down to a force of 83 wolves, 50 of which are trained combatants. The remaining 33 are untrained, but have all been put under arms. There are an additional 26 females and 12 children being kept under lockdown in the kennels.
What about their house staff? Roger, the head of the Cougar clans, asked. Those that were wolves were added to the defending forces or put in the kennels. Those that weren't were either farmed out to the homes of whoever wanted them, or... Chad grimaced. They were eliminated. There were a few dark comments muttered at that point.
So what are we going to do about the ones that have been farmed out? Roger asked.
I have three teams that are going to start going house to house when we launch our attack on the main compound. After we finish our attack on the main compound, I've detailed which groups will then go after the other members' homes.
How many homes is that?
Chad grimaced again.
A lot. Over 20.
Our only advantage is that a lot of those homes have only one or two mages living in them, so we believe they'll be easy to overwhelm quickly, either by stealth or just a blitzkrieg-style assault.
What about those which are not?
Boris of the Tiger Clans asked.
Sean spoke up.
There are going to be losses tonight.
I'm sorry, but there are. I agreed to this plan. I take responsibility for it.
Now move on,
Sean sighed and motioned to Chad. Sean listened with half a mind, going over in his head everything that Sal had just told him, as Chad went over the plan with the others. It was simpler than Chad wanted to go with, but the troops were all irregulars. Only about 100 of them had actually been trained for combat, and that was Claudia's 18, Sean's 30, and 50 of Samus's dwarves. The rest, of which there were another 200, were all either a little experienced or totally inexperienced. 90 of the most inexperienced fighters would attack those three first points that Chad had identified. As these points were fairly obvious points of attack, they were all well defended. Once the defenders at those points were well engaged, the remainder of the forces, not including Claudia's 18, would attack two different locations away from the first three. Chad believed that with all of the defenders lured away to the first three spots, the other forces would be able to quickly force entry under cover of the first attacks and come up behind the engaged defenders and quickly overwhelm them. As for Claudia's helicopters, they had learned that there was in fact a kill switch that had been set up by Harkins and his people, so that if it looked like they were going to lose control of their Lycans, a single mage could activate a device in the main manner that would activate all of the pellets at once, as well as set off several massive silver bombs in key locations across the property. Especially in the kennels, where the females and older children that were still alive were being kept to help guarantee obedience. So instead of being used to open up a second front in the attack, the helicopters would swoop in and drop Claudia's 18 fighters, plus Sean, on the roof of the main building 10 minutes before the first attack began. Jolene would be in one, maintaining silence spells on it, while Sean did the same for the other. Sean and the rest would then make their way inside, as stealthily as possible, working their way down to where the mages who held that kill switch were, and immobilize them before they had the chance to set it off and kill all their Lycans once they realized that the fight was lost. Sean watched as Chad fielded questions, though not a lot were asked. Sean hadn't even wanted to brief them, but those here had contributed people, and Roxy's dad had told them they had a right to know, as it was their people's lives on the line. Bill himself was off on a little side project that Sean had been told not to worry about. Seeing as Sean already had a lot to worry about, he didn't.
Okay, that's all of it, Chad said, clapping his hands together. Now we all need to get going to get to our starting points, so all of this can come off on time.
One last question, Boris asked.
Yes?
What about the neighbors? I know the compound is out of town a short way, but I would think that this will be a very loud undertaking.
That's why we plan to be gone before anyone realizes just what's going on, Chad told him. Other than that, we're working on something, but I can't discuss it.
Boss?
Yes, James?
Arthur asked, looking up from the book he was reading. He'd gone over the same page 6 times now. The previous one had taken him 8 tries to digest. Something was bothering him tonight, but he'd be damned if he could put a name to it.
There's a Sheriff Channing at the front door. He says he needs to talk to you.
Arthur raised an eyebrow.
He did now, did he?
Yes, and he was most insistent. Arthur looked at the clock on the wall. It was a few minutes before 10 p.m. This obviously wasn't a social call.
Very well, Arthur sighed, and getting up from his chair, he set the book down and headed for the front door. Oh, James?
Yes, boss.
Get the rest of the council on the line. I don't think the good sheriff is here for polite conversation.
Sure thing, boss.
Going down the stairs, Arthur saw that Sheriff Channing was indeed there. Frank was keeping an eye on him.
Sheriff Channing, Arthur said, coming up to him and shaking hands. At last we meet in person. To what do I owe this honor?
I'm here to invoke the tradition of silence, Bill said.
The tradition of silence? Arthur said, surprised.
The Council of Sapientia is the bearer of the traditions, and your council has held that it has the power of those traditions over all of us. I hereby petition you, here, now, for 5 of your members to conduct the involved spells and magics so that none of the mundanes become aware of what is about to transpire.
But the tradition normally only applies to mages, Arthur said, considering it.
Sean, my son-in-law, your niece Jolene, and Peg Wilston are all magic users, and they all request it. Arthur, you've entered your council into an alliance with the Fellowship of Lycans. We've agreed to help you with your defense, and honestly, none of us wishes to expose any more than we have to the mundanes of the world. So we could really use your help tonight.
Arthur took a deep breath and sighed.
I can't fault your logic, and if anyone complains, I can say that 3 magic users, one of which is still a member of my household, requested it.
Arthur turned to Frank.
Go upstairs and tell James to make sure that the other council members are here within the hour.
Bill interrupted.
I can have a car pick them up and bring them here if necessary.
Arthur nodded.
Frank, find out from James if they'd rather not drive, so I can have the good sheriff send someone over to get them. Then come back down here and let me know who needs to be picked up.
Yes, sir,
Frank said, and quickly ran up the stairs.
So, now that we're alone, Arthur smiled. Sean's attacking the Ascendants tonight.
Bill shook his head, smiling.
You know I'm not at liberty to answer that question, Arthur.
Arthur chuckled.
Oh, of course. But I have to commend young Sean for taking this action. It is always harder to accuse people of being upstarts and revolutionaries when they stick to the traditions, right?
That, and it's a lot easier not to have to explain all the noise, Bill agreed.
Well, let's see who we get, and I'll pick 4 to accompany me.
Bill looked at Arthur in surprise.
You're going?
When I was a young man, I took it into my head to sail around the world. Oh, not on a fancy sailboat or anything as pretentious. I signed up as an able-bodied seaman on a number of small cargo ships. I guess what my parents would have called tramp steamers. I remember when we sailed around the Cape of Good Hope. There was this feeling in the air, as if things were about to change in a very fundamental way. One of the old salts told me that we were about to experience a sea change. A very apt expression, that.
Well, Bill, I am feeling that tonight, and it's not a comfortable thing to feel at my age. I think it just might be for the best if I'm there tonight, should anything unexpected take place.
I didn't think the tradition allowed you to get involved.
It doesn't, and I won't, Arthur said. However, I still think it best that I go. Now, let me find a pair of warm clothes to change into and a heavy jacket. You can invite your men inside out of the cold while we wait for everyone to arrive.
Sean looked out the open door of the Huey helicopter that they were flying in. He'd cheated on the silence spell, as he'd found something a lot cheaper and easier, and taught it to Jolene before they left. Rather than try and abate all that noise, and it was a lot. He'd simply created a reflector that directed all the sound straight up. He wasn't pleased about the moon being up, because that made it almost as bright as daylight to all of those with night vision. But the pilot said it would make it a lot easier if they didn't have to use lights when it came time to land on the roof. Besides, who looks up? Sean shook his head and sighed. They were all pretty heavily armed. Sean had created a large number of wands with cramping spells on them and high-level sleep spells. Everyone had tasers and high-powered cattle prods, zip ties, pepper spray, and ball gags. Jolene had made a joke about having a real fun party with all of that stuff, and the look Sean had gotten from all of the wolves after that had actually made him blush. They started to drop down quickly, and Sean grabbed the handhold with his left hand tightly and stepped out onto the skid. 2 months ago, the idea of doing that would have terrified him. Now he knew his grip was strong enough and his balance good enough that he had nothing to fear. Funny how much his life had changed. They leveled off, and Sean could see the house right in front of them. The pilot flared, coming within inches of the roof, and Sean just stepped off as the other nine piled out to either side in less than a second, and then the helicopter was gone, and they all spread out and fell prone to make room for the second helicopter as it dropped off the rest of Claudia's wolves. They all hugged the roof for a moment, listening for any sounds of alarm, but heard nothing.
"Okay," John, the werewolf in charge, said in a hushed voice. "Everyone move off to your assigned entry points. Entry in 1 minute from my mark."
John paused a moment as everyone checked their mission timers, which were really just cheap smartphones with a couple of specialty apps on them.
"Mark!"
Breaking up into three groups, they all hurried off to their assigned spots as they all shifted. Sean was with John and his team. They'd be entering on the third floor of the building through a number of skylights and dormer-type windows. Most of the third floor was storage, and for servants, it was expected to be vacant tonight. Sean checked the window for any magic, and as they expected, he didn't find any. One of the other wolves quickly defeated the lock on the window then, and opening it, they all quietly slipped in. They spent the next 2 minutes carefully checking the floor to be sure it was clear.
"Alpha 3, contact,"
Sean heard over his radio. Turning and looking at the door next to the one that John was checking, Sean saw that the team member had a wand out and was using it.
"Alpha 3, they're asleep,"
came the call as Sean quickly padded over and looked into the room. There were four young women, actually. Two of them looked more like girls. They were all sleeping on beds, and each one had a collar on, with a metal chain leading to a heavy-looking paddock set in the floor by the bed.
"This doesn't look good,"
Sean grunted, and stepping into the room, he checked each of the girls. The collars on each of them were magical, so Sean just drained each of them, causing them to unlock, as Alpha 3 followed behind him, first gagging and then zip-tying each of the girls' arms and legs. Sean paused a moment to look at them. None of them were lichens. He knew that as soon as he had touched them. They were all very lovely, with dark skin and long straight hair, which on two of them appeared to be a dark blonde, red on the third. The fourth one's hair was white. Sean noticed the ear on one of them as Rich, Alpha 3, rolled her over to adjust her tag. They were slightly pointed.
"Dark elves," his lion told him.
"Those exist?"
"Not normally in this world. The only pathways to their lands lie in northern Europe. The Norse dealt with them, called them the Dokalfar."
Sean shook the one with white hair awake. Her eyes came open quickly and were a rather surprising red color, or at least her irises were. She looked at him, and her whole body twitched as she tried to move, and then she scowled as she realized she'd been restrained.
"We're here to free the lichens," Sean told her. "We can either leave you here," she started to shake her head no rather vigorously, "or take you with us." She nodded then.
"Fine. With us it is. If I cut you loose,
Will you stay quiet, calm the others, and do as you're told? She nodded again. Understand that if you give us away or cause us problems, I'll kill you. Sean noticed her eyes narrowed just a little bit, but she nodded again. Sean used a claw to cut the zip ties and then undid the gag.
Wake your friends up, calm them, tell them what I told you, then wait here until one of us tells you what to do, okay?
Okay,
she said in a voice that Sean could only describe as melodious.
What do you think they were going to do with them?
Richard asked as Sean left the room to catch up with John.
Considering they're all naked, I don't think it's all that hard to guess, Sean growled. Get someone in here to keep an eye on them and tell them what to do. We can sort them out when this is over.
Rich nodded and called over one of the guys from Charlie Group who'd been designated for survivor pickup.
What are they?
John asked softly as they all prepped to go down to the third floor. Sean checked his mission clock. They were 3 minutes behind schedule now.
Our replacements, I guess. Dark elves.
Huh. I've heard stories about them. I think they don't do well in sun.
John keyed his radio.
Alpha 1. All groups. Step 2.
Forming a human chain, like Sean had seen in all those action movies, they moved down the stairs, each with a hand on the shoulder of the man in front of them, a wand in their other hand. Odd-numbered men had cramping wands. The even-numbered ones had sleeping wands. Sleeping would be tried first, and then the more serious attacks if that didn't work. The second floor of the building was rather opulent, Sean noted. It reminded him of some of the better casinos that he'd worked in as a busboy and general maintenance worker. The floor had a fairly new and thick carpet. There were tables set to the side of each doorway, leading off of the hall. And there were fine pieces of artwork decorating the walls. According to their sources, these were all bedrooms on this level, for those members who had no place of their own to live in, or who were assigned to work as guards in the compound. The door to the master's suite, which Sean figured was Harkins's, was at the center of the hallway. There were two less doors on that side, giving a clue to just how large that set of rooms was. They quickly broke up into three-man teams, and starting at opposite ends of the hallway, one man would open the door while the other two used their wands on whoever was inside. With 22 doors, it would take about 5 minutes to clear them all. Looking over the shoulders of the first team, Sean noted that there were two men in the room, both of whom never even woke up as they got zapped with the sleep spell, and then quickly gagged and trussed up with zip ties by the three-man crew.
Step it up, John growled. We're running behind. Switch to two-man teams. My men, on me.
They were just starting to the third round of six doors as John started to prep his team to go downstairs to the ground floor, when Sean's mission timer vibrated once. Swearing, Sean turned and raced for Harkins's door, as within seconds, the sounds of the first assault started, and an alarm went off in the building. Kicking in the door, Sean led with the cramper wand. The room he entered was obviously a living room. There were two doors on the right side leading out of it, and one on the left. Guessing left, Sean ran over to the door and kicked that one in as he shot the person on the bed as they started to sit up. It was only when the wand went off that he realized it was a woman. And Sean suddenly got shot in the side by a man who had been standing behind the door as Sean had entered the room. Sean turned on him and was shot three more times before he grabbed the man's hand and crushed it around the pistol, which held up rather well. Looking up into the pained eyes of the man holding the gun, Sean recognized him as one of the members of the Council of Ascendance's senior coven. However, it wasn't Harkins. Spinning the man around, Sean knocked him to the ground, was surprised when the cramper wand didn't work on him, so Sean kicked him between the legs, hitting him in the balls, and then while the man curled up in even more pain, Sean relieved him of the rings, amulet, and earrings he was wearing. He even had magical bracelets on both of his arms, and Sean got those too. Then he gagged, zip-tied, and slept him, just to be safe. Pulling the blankets off the bed, he noticed that the woman there was nude, rather attractive, and glaring at him.
"You here willingly, or are you here as a slave?" Sean growled, freeing her of the effects of the cramper spell, so she could reply to him as he started to search the room for traces of Harkins.
"That's my husband you killed,"
she gasped back at him.
"He's not dead," Sean growled back. "Where is Harkins? I thought he lived here."
"Harkins hasn't lived here since he married Teresa Styx. She didn't want to raise her kids in this place."
Sean swore loudly as he started going through the drawers by the bed. He could hear fighting outside now. There were guns firing and even a couple of explosions.
"Where does he live?"
Sean asked as he found one of the magical devices that could be used to kill all of the lichens.
"Like I'm going to tell you."
"Okay, fine."
Draining the device of its magic, Sean walked over to where her husband lay on the floor.
"I'll kill your husband. Let's see if that changes your mind."
Sean raised his foot to crush his skull.
"Wait!"
she cried, and quickly rattled off an address that wasn't too far from here.
"Nice to see that you care," Sean smiled.
"We're not animals like you."
"No, you're worse," Sean said.
And after sleeping her with a spell, he returned to the hallway. Stepping out of the room, he could see that there were bodies everywhere. Most of them were mages, and they were being gagged and hogtied. Several of them were wolves. Sean went to check them. One was dead, two were wounded seriously, but Sean was able to heal them enough for their own bodies to take over. Three more were under the effects of spells, which Sean quickly dispelled. Looking around, he saw that there were only five wolves trussing up the downed mages and helping the wounded.
"Where's John and his team?" Sean asked.
"Down on the first floor,"
one of the team members who doubled as a medic told him.
"Damn. Get everyone up. Get those girls down here. Send everyone who can fight downstairs. Harkins isn't here. We need to get moving."
"Is he downstairs?"
"No. He's not here. He doesn't live here anymore."
"Shit. I hope he doesn't have one of those kill switches."
"Yeah, me too,"
Sean growled, and ran down to the end of the hallway and started down the stairs. There was one of them on the first floor, and he was sure John and his team would need all of the help that they could get. Friend of the Devil. Harkins woke up when the alarm on the nightstand started to beep. Silencing it with his hand, he sat up quickly and looked around the bedroom. His wife stirred briefly in her sleep, but otherwise everything was quiet. None of the house alarms had gone off, and it was still quiet outside.
"Damn idiots probably tripped the alarm for the garbage man again," Harkins swore.
Still, it was best that he got up and checked in with the people back at the compound. Just because they'd made mistakes three times this last week, that was no excuse for him to slack off. Getting out of bed, he stuck his feet in his slippers, and picking up his robe, he put it on, and wrapping it around him, he tied the belt and walked out of his bedroom, carefully closing the door behind him so as not to wake up his wife. The doors to both of the girls' bedrooms were closed. He debated checking in on them a moment, but decided instead he could check on them after he checked in with Hodges at the compound. Walking down the hallway, he left the bedrooms behind, and walking past the living room and then the kitchen, he came to his office. Opening the door, he walked over to his desk, not bothering with the room lights. Last thing he wanted to do was ruin his night vision and then be tripping over kids' toys and other stuff all the way back to bed. The light on the alarm on his desk was blinking. Picking up the phone, he was surprised to find that the line was dead. Searching his pockets, he realized he'd left his cell phone back on the nightstand. Grumbling, he picked up the magical communicator that sat on his desk. He hated these things. Since the advent of the telephone, nobody had bothered to do a thing to improve them. The sound quality they had was like a 60s child's phonograph, and they needed to be recharged constantly after use. Rumor was someone in Eruditio had been working on an improved version. But then the cell phone came out and killed it dead. Harkins snorted. They all relied too much on modern conveniences and not enough on their own powers. just another sign of weakness in the modern world. Turning the device on, he spoke into it.
Hodges, what's going on over there? Don't tell me that they alerted on the garbage man again.
Harkins counted to 10 as he waited for a reply. When nothing came, he spoke the name of the man who was supposed to be on watch.
Kenneth, what's going on over there?
Sir, we're under attack. They're everywhere. I've already lost most of my men. We're being overwhelmed. They're everywhere.
Trigger the damn kill switch. Now!
Harkins yelled. Not only would that kill off his own Lycans, leaving that damn Valens kid with a hollow victory, but it would set off silver bombs and some other very nasty devices all over the property. Harkins doubted that all of Valens's animals had that damn protection trinket yet. His own people figured that something that powerful had to take months to make, and Valens hadn't had months. At best, he'd only had maybe one of them.
I can't get to it, sir. They drove us out of the control room. Hodges is gone. I can't reach him.
Swearing, Harkins dropped the device and, grabbing the drawer of his desk, he yanked it open.
Having a bad night, are we?
A voice growled softly in the room. Harkins's head came up, and he cast a light spell almost without thinking about it. Sitting in a chair in what had been a dark corner was Hyena. He was still dressed in a long dark overcoat and the black fedora hat, though both currently looked a lot worse for wear, as well as a set of black trousers. However, the shirt he was wearing was without a tie and appeared to have bloodstains on it. As Harkins watched, Hyena pulled out a cigar and, biting off the end of it, which he spit on the floor, he lit it and started to puff on it.
"I didn't say you could smoke in here,"
Harkins said, and then looked back down into the drawer of his desk for the remote magical trigger for all of the lichen traps and kill spells they'd laid down back at the compound.
"You didn't say a lot of things," Sal said as he put the lighter back in his pocket.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
Harkins said, and started opening the other drawers, looking for that damn remote.
"I finally caught up with the Valens kid," Sal said conversationally.
"Then where the hell is he?"
Harkins grumbled, and started looking over his desk.
"Is that why they're attacking now? Because you killed him?"
"Look at me when I'm talking to you," Sal growled.
Harkins looked up and snorted.
"I've got bigger things to worry about right now than you."
"Oh yeah, I heard. That Valens kid. He's a mean son of a bitch. I wonder how many of your people he'll leave alive when all of this is done."
Harkins's eyes got wide then.
"You let him live?"
Harkins yelled, glaring at him. Sal laughed.
"No, he let me live."
"Fuck."
Harkins swore and looked in the desk drawer again. That damn remote had to be somewhere.
"Stop wasting your time. I've got it in my pocket."
Sal chuckled.
"What? I need that. I need to stop them."
"You ain't stopping shit," Sal growled. "You lied."
"I lied? So what? You're a paid killer, that's it. I give you money and tell you who to kill, and you kill them. Is that so hard to understand? I don't owe you the truth. I don't owe you anything, especially not money, if you couldn't kill one fucking little wet-behind-the-ears twerp."
"You broke your oath to me," Sal growled. 12 years ago, all of you, all 5 council leaders, swore an oath to me. You all swore to leave the kid and his mother alone."
"I told you we didn't break it. Those gang members did. Valens was already learning magic."
Harkins started glancing around his desk for a wand. He was suddenly aware that he was alone in a room with a man who killed people like him for a living.
"The kid told me otherwise, so I checked. And guess what? He told me the truth. You broke your oath to me, an oath you swore on your life."
Sal growled and stood up.
"And now it's time to collect."
Harkins swore and cast a sleep spell. Nothing. Paralyzation. Still nothing. Reaching down deep, he threw out his strongest spell, a force spike that picked up Hyena